Big Oil Check-In, exploring the end of the age of oil.
Where are you on the range of responses to peak oil production? How quickly do you think we need to act to adapt to a world whose fundamental assumptions are very different than those we're used to? Where oil and gas go for $10 or more a gallon, when they're available at all? I've thought for a while that very rapid adaptation is necessary if we're going to preserve much of what's important to us. Not continued production of iPhones or other plastic toys, I'm talking about basic security, food, clothing, and shelter for everyone. And then along comes someone and makes a good case that I'm stodgily stuck in the past, not imagining a rapid enough transition away from oil. That happened earlier this month with a column Tom Whipple wrote for the News Press of Falls Church, Virginia, about the auto industry. Earlier this year, the three U.S. automakers closed SUV plants so that each major automaker only had one left. My reaction at the time was that one SUV plant is one too many. I won't argue that SUVs are good for nothing. Surely there are some reasonable uses for them. But there are so many SUVs on the road, many of them in low-rust places like the Southwest, I figure we already have more than enough SUVs in the U.S. given how inefficient they are at performing the basic function of moving humans from point A to point B. Tom Whipple in his column goes further. He says it's time to stop selling most of today's models of cars and light trucks, period. Here's some of what Whipple writes. In the next few years, he writes, oil prices are going up so high that ownership and use of the automobiles and trucks in their present form will be a totally uneconomic proposition. How many of the current flavor of cars and trucks is Detroit going to sell, with gasoline at $10 a gallon or higher? The U.S. already has some 250 million two-axle motor vehicles, cars, light trucks, vans, running around and sitting in traffic jams, and only 200 million licensed drivers. Yes, that's right, 250 million two-axle motor vehicles, but only 200 million licensed drivers. With some tender care and adequate spare parts, this inventory easily could be useful for another 20 to 30 years, considering how much less they are going to be driven once gas prices go up. Even the most optimistic do not see how there will be much oil around for powering private cars 25 years from now. When one considers that we already have more than enough trucks and cars with low-mileage internal combustion engines to last us through the rest of the oil age, the only logical thing to do is to stop making more. That's right, stop building and selling anything that consumes liquid fuels at anywhere near the rate consumed by our current fleet of vehicles. We stopped making cars once before, in 1942, when, as a nation, we decided that military production was a higher priority. It's time to do the same again, for the economic crisis we face will be fully equal or worse than the challenges of the Second World War. If we are going to replace enough of those gas-guzzling internal combustion vehicles before they have to be scrapped for lack of affordable fuel, then the sooner we stop, the better. That's some of what Tom Whipple says in his column. Now, Whipple includes some specific suggestions also, like immediately stop selling any two-axle vehicle that gets under 30 miles per gallon, and start making only 100 mile per gallon cars as soon as possible. They've been built already, so it's just a matter of scaling up production. And require that the government and its contractors purchase only hyper-efficient cars to jumpstart demand until gas prices get so high that the general public also demands them. All this sounds dramatic, and it is. However, it's less dramatic than churning out tens of millions more of dead-end cars and trucks and vans, only to watch them sit and rust for lack of affordable fuel. Whipple makes a good case. You can read his weekly columns at the Falls Church News Press website or at energybulletin.net. I'm Carl Ettinger, and that's this week's Peak Oil Check-In.
Peak Oil Check-In was produced by Relocalizing Vermont Productions in association with WGDR Plainfield.